people who love them.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, one of your hosts for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. No, that's not right. That's the other podcast I do.
Take two.
Hello, Mickey.
Take two. Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of The Thing About Cars. And around the table, we've got Dawn. Are you there?
Hello, everyone.
And Ben?
Oh, yes.
And Becca?
Hello.
And I heard from Ronnie, and he's running late if he's going to get here at all. Apparently, he had to cover for somebody at work, and he's dealing with a customer who just likes to talk, I think. So, you know, nothing wrong with that. People need to talk. I just hope they're doing the social distancing thing. On our agenda, let's start with the moment of Grand Trivia Auto. We may have done this one before. You guys are going to have to call me on this. The question is, what city was the first to use parking meters? And I feel like we've done this one before.
I don't think we have.
You don't think we have?
Mm-mm.
All right, I'm setting our timer for the show. What city was the first to use parking meters? Was it New York, New York? Was it Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? Was it Oklahoma City, Oklahoma? Or was it Chicago, Illinois? Those are our choices. Was it Chicago, Oklahoma City, Philadelphia, or New York, first to use parking meters? We'll come back to that at the end of the episode. In the meantime, let's take a look at our agenda for this thing. The first question I want to ask is a question from my friend Jenny Hammer DeMeglio. She actually posed a question thinking it would make for good trivia fodder, but I think it's just good conversation fodder. She asks, why was the first Mustang specified as a 64 and a half when I've never heard any of the other cars being specified with an extra half notation? If there are other cars, what are they? And since we have a resident Mustang fan, I thought I'd throw that on the table.
And actually, I don't know about other cars, but it's not the only Mustang with a half-year designation either. The long and short of the 64 and a half is, technically speaking, that's not what it is. All Mustangs in the beginning were 1965 Mustangs. But what they did as a, you know, like a campaign thing, what have you, they had decided to debut the car early so it wasn't lost in with all the other cars that come out with their new model at the end of the prior year. They wanted the Mustang's debut to be separate from all those other cars. So they did it early, and they did it at the World Fair. But because it came out earlier than all the other 1965 models, the enthusiasts dubbed it 1964 and a half. But all the VIN stampings still reflect that it's a 1965 Mustang. If you encounter one that hasn't been changed from what it was originally, the difference would be fine touches. Since they were released early, they didn't get things like certain beveling or, you know, trim in certain areas. They were, I guess, kind of like a rush job. So they don't have the finer tunings that all of the other 65s have. But technically, it's something that that the enthusiast dubbed it.
Okay, so it's a colloquial designation, not an official one.
Exactly, but then you'll have other things like the what they call the 7-Up Mustang, which was 91, I believe, but they'll call it a 91 and a half. And they're all green Fox chassis with a white interior and a white convertible top. But there's other ones with the half-year designation. And it just means they came out at a different time than is considered standard.
Yep.
And, you know, mid-year introductions are, you know, not really all that unusual, but they rarely get designated like that. You know, a lot of times you have something that may come out early, or you may think of it as the year before but late. Those things happen all the time. And one really interesting example was the Corvette in 1984. There was no 1983 Corvette, some of y'all may recall, but the 84 came out so early that if they wanted to, they could have called it an 83 and a half, but they didn't.
But then when you go to technicalities, you look and say, what is the VIN showing?
Right, exactly.
Right.
And so there is no such thing as a VIN with a half-year designation on it, is there?
No.
Yeah.
No, and it's probably something that, because the enthusiasts dubbed the early one a 64 and a half, it could just be something within the Mustang community that it created a trend. I'm not sure why they would do it with them and not everybody else, but officially there is no half year.
Right. Well, Jenny, I hope that answers your question. And if we need to go back and do a clarification, hit me online. And thank you. That was actually a pretty good question, because I had no idea. I thought, what, 64 and a half? Did they really do that? And Becca was able to say no. So yeah, obviously. Becca, while we're talking about cars that you love, you said you had a movie thing you wanted to talk about?
I did. I stumbled across something purely by accident. If anybody has IMDb, you can put in there now your watch list. You can save things that you like and follow them and whatnot. And I had gotten a pop-up about this one actress that appears in a lot of stuff that I like, that she was on this top list. And, you know, click, click, click. And I discovered there's a movie about DeLorean. And it's actually really recent. This movie came out in 2019, and it's called Framing John DeLorean. And oh, yeah. It's about his beginnings and his rise through GM and him creating DeLorean and then the inevitable collapse of all that. And it's got Alec Baldwin, and the actress that I like is Maureen Baccarin.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, she was in Firefly, which I love.
Oh, love Firefly.
Love it. That could be a whole other podcast. Anyways.
Good. And Serenity that followed.
Oh, there's so much more too. Okay. I'm not going to focus on Firefly. I promise. But any of you that do know me well know that my Jeep actually has a Firefly theme.
Yes, you've been outfitting that slowly over time to turn it into a Firefly themed, like, cosplay for your car.
Yes, yeah. My little theme. But so I haven't seen it, but I'm super interested. So I just found this the other day. I need to go seek this out so I can watch this movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, Becca, I thought you were going to say Ford versus Ferrari was the movie.
I actually have it now. I just haven't sat down to watch it. But I didn't know if maybe everybody else in the world knew about this movie and it was just me with my head in the sand or what happened. But I didn't even know there was a DeLorean movie that came out last year.
I'd heard of it, but then forgot about it. I haven't seen it yet. But thanks for reminding me.
Definitely. Well, maybe at some point we need to have a socially responsible movie night or something.
Actually, Netflix has where you can watch along and put things in the chat with other people.
Oh, no
really?
Kidding.
Yeah, you can have a movie night on Netflix socially appropriately.
Oh my God, but I want out of the house.
So everybody has to be a Netflix subscriber in order to participate though, right?
Yeah.
Still, that's a pretty good feature. I think that's pretty cool.
Or you can just share your password with somebody.
Well, and text them.
Right. That would be just illegal.
But for the sake of a movie night.
Yes. Yes. You know, social contacts. I was talking with a friend of mine today. She's like, I understand why we need social distancing, but I still think that social contact is completely healthy to have. And
Very much. And
she was actually proposing, she's like, well, why don't we actually, instead of doing the social distancing thing, maybe it's better to have little pods of friends, and the pods of friends treat each other like family, and they have their interactions that may not always require 6 feet. But I'm like, this, I knew you were going to go there, but, she's, you know, it's not a bad idea really. It's the whole, you know, expanding the size of your family and having interaction, because
having a group. Yeah.
Right, you got to have the group. You got to run with your pack. And in her case, it's the kids that she's worried about. You know, she's got a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old child. And she's like, this is prime time social development time for her. And she's not getting any of it because there's even some doubt as to whether or not school will come back in the fall.
Definitely. It's been really hard on my kids, and it's been really hard on their friends. And I talk to their friends' parents, and it's just, we really want them to be able to hang out, but everybody's so worried.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's move on.
I've noticed that more of my friends are willing to get in the car and come outside the perimeter for what I'm calling physically spaced social interaction.
Yeah.
And so because they're not sitting in traffic all the time, they're actually, I'm going to come out and to the country here and have a meal across the porch with you.
Yep.
There you go.
Exactly. So, all right, let's find our next item on our agenda here. Ben, how did you get your sheared bolt fixed?
Okay, well, I think I mentioned
my shear lock. I'm sorry, I had to. Oh, yeah. I cut you off, but I had to.
I'm going to mute Becca now.
I'm sorry. Sheared bolt. I'm sorry, Ben. Go ahead.
Right. I think this may have been mentioned in a previous episode. Work continues with the Lotus, and I've been messing around with the cylinder head. I had it on the car, found some valve train issues, took it back off the car. And in the process of dealing with the valve train issues, I broke off one of the studs that, secure the camshaft caps. It was a case of just getting a little careless with some torque, kind of not really paying attention to what I was doing. So, my own fault, although that said, a lot of them look like they're pretty old. Some of these may be 50 years old. And
it could have a flaw anyways.
Possibly, yeah. Well, so the one that was snapped off, I took it to my friend Bob, the old grizzled racing mechanic who has forgotten more than most of us will ever know about these things. And he said, yes, you did the right thing. He says, I've got something I can try. If that doesn't work, then I can put it on the drill press and do more extreme things. So what he did, and the stud was broken off about a quarter inch below the surface. So not easy to deal with at all. And I've always had lousy, lousy luck with, any kind of reverse thread extractor. All I ever do is break them off, which then leaves you with a piece of metal that's harder than the bolt in the core of the bolt where you want to drill. Anyway, so what Bob did was he took a strip of metal that had a hole punched in one end. He laid that hole over the hole in the head. He hooked up his arc welder and basically built up metal on top of the broken piece of stud until it came up to where that strip of metal was and fused with that. So he had basically just built a handle on top of the broken piece and spun it right out.
Hmm.
Did it in about 2 minutes, charged me $35, money very well spent, I thought.
Right.
So I'm very pleased, and he gave me some additional pointers about not breaking other ones. And just to be on the safe side, I pulled out all the other ones on that particular cam. And that was a good thing because I found some of them, in fact, showed a little bit of stretching.
Oh.
So, yeah, when you can see a stretch in the thread, when you can see where the threads start getting farther apart, and one of them, I could actually run my fingers along and feel where the middle was starting to draw in. So a lot
That's
of the
bad
rest.
News.
Yeah. A lot of the rest of these are ready to go. I think somebody in the car's past, some previous owner or previous owner's mechanic was a bit less careful than I was. So I just, popped them all out and changed them.
Good.
Done. Very good.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, I would have thought that would have cost you a lot more. That's awesome.
That's a deal.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of the welding technique before. I mean, even on the online forums where people will say, God, I sheared off this bolt head. What am I supposed to do? And sometimes the answer is exactly what this guy did. Just take a little bead of from an arc welder and, put bead on top of bead until you have enough clearance to, in some cases, weld on an actual bolt, just another bolt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or a bolt head, and then just wrench it out the way it's supposed to go.
Being broken off below the surface makes it more difficult, of course.
Much more difficult.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You don't need to pause for that.
I was wondering, so it wouldn't fuse to the side because it was broken lower?
No, I think it may have been something to do with the difference of metals, because the stud is steel and the head is aluminum. Mm. So they don't really stick to each other. And I'm not sure exactly what kind of rod he was using, but it looked like a wire feed machine.
Yeah.
Plus the hull has a layer of oil on its walls.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad you got all that sorted out.
Yeah, me too.
And for $35 to get a clean head back, that's nice. That's very good.
Yeah, so while I was there, I also dropped off some wheel spacers with them. I have these wheels. They're really, really rare British-made wheels. Of course, this is a car that uses a knock-on wheel, one big giant nut in the middle instead of, four or five lug nuts.
Right.
And these wheels have a ring that goes between the knockoff nut and the alloy wheel that bears some of the load and spreads it out so you don't crack the wheel. And the guy
that was some of my question there.
Yeah, well, the guy I bought these wheels from packed them very poorly when he shipped them to me, and a couple of these rings fell out in shipping somewhere. And the manufacturer of the wheel says, no, I can't help you. We haven't made these since about 1980. So Bob's going to spin me up some on his lathe and, see if they'll work.
Well, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I want a lathe.
They are cool tools. His is huge.
Yeah.
And imagine that they're affordable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A good one will set you back quite a bit, and then you need the skills to do stuff.
And if you don't know what you're doing, they can be quite dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and like I was thinking, that's one of the things I can't do and I would love to learn to do is welding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But people don't let me play with fire a lot. So.
Gosh, Rebecca, it's like you might have a track record of, you know, pyromania or something.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but fire sure is pretty.
I've got very amateur welding skills. I had a boss years ago who needed a winch mounted on a trailer, and he pointed me to a pile of scrap metal and the trailer and the winch and a wire feed welder, and he said, have at it. I said, wow. Well, my dad let me hold an acetylene torch a couple times when I was about 13. He said, yeah, you'll be all right. I managed to get it done, and it worked, and it never broke while I worked for him. So I've got amateurish skills at it, no formal training, but I've been thinking maybe I should just go buy myself a cheap wire feed machine and some scrap metal and just play.
You know, I would love to find somebody who could sponsor us. Like we can even, you know, say, hey, we're on the podcast. Can you teach each of us to weld? There's got to be an entity out there that actually does the education that'll do that for us.
Oh, sure.
I would think Chattahoochee Tech.
Yeah, let's make some phone calls. Becca, can we put that on our call list?
Okay.
All right. Not that you're the keeper of the list all of a sudden, but it helps me remember if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Good. I could have. Oh, I totally missed pointing out that you're asking the chick to do that. Well, we have Dawn now too. So.
I don't know anybody in the welding space, but yeah.
No.
Well, all right. Max does it, and I've asked him, and he's always like, sure, I'll show you, and then never does.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe even Max.
Yeah, let's lean on somebody and see if we can't turn it into something fun. That would be kind of cool.
But I can't even solder well. So
yeah. Know. Oh my God! As many times as I. Yeah. Yeah. Well, can you?
It's a definite skill, and you know, or either that, or we could get somebody from one of the IBEWs, one of the local unions, and I bet you they have some incredible welders.
I have. When it comes to soldering, I do have formal training in that.
Okay.
And, or what about your friend? What was his name, Bob?
Yeah, well, he's an old school machinist, basically, an old retired racing mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Well, old, you know, I always prefer old school over anything, but...
Oh, sure. Yeah, I don't know that he teaches, per se, or if it's something he would even want to do, but...
Yeah, I don't know if he'd be willing to let us spend the day in his shop and just, you know, maybe like do a day of techniques or something. That'd be kind of cool.
I have no idea.
So interesting. Okay. So I need your help. I need everybody's help with a completely, we're jumping in the next topic on the agenda here. And I need everybody's help. This is a personal psychological problem I've got.
Uh-oh.
So many jokes.
Right. So occasionally I look at the world and I see these headlines online about this cool new truck or this cool new trailer, like this new freakishly new Airstream came out and it's just slick and opulent and I want one. And it's just
really?
Like, yeah. And I keep thinking to myself, wouldn't it be nice? And there's a part of me that just revels in the moment of seeing this nice thing on the screen until I look at the price tag. Right. And then I have that, the rest of the moment is like, why do I keep torturing myself by looking at things that I will never be able to afford?
Right.
And so that is turning into a more of a growing sentiment for me. It's like, yeah, sure. It's pretty. Okay. Can I get back to trying to move my life in some positive direction now, you know, instead of just taking a moment to say, okay, that's really cool. And then not getting bogged down by it. So that's, what do you guys do? Do you have this sentiment? Do you look at things and you're like, screw it. I'm not going to look at this anymore because I just can't afford it or whatever. Am I alone doing this?
You are not alone.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say, I can't give you advice to not do it. Cause I have very similar issues. And by the way, I'm already on the Airstream website.
Yeah. I think it's human nature and some of us cope with it by redirecting.
Yeah.
I mean, I know every time the Porsches come out every year, I look at them and close the book slowly. Because sometimes I just don't even want to know the price.
Right.
Holy cow.
It's just turned into a major frustration. It's like, why am I torturing myself with this dream anymore? The dream is not achievable.
But I also think that things have gotten really expensive.
Yes, inflation has been insane.
I mean, I think the price of things lately, and I'm just put my economics hat on. I don't know how that's sustainable for some of this. It seems like there's a small customer base for some of the expensiveness, or people are just extending their credit. I don't know.
Well, yes, people are drowning. Yes.
Not that I want to veer us into a political conversation, but I do think that the gap between the haves and the have-nots is getting bigger every day.
Yes, I completely agree. That crossed my mind a minute ago. Yes.
And
but you know, the also thing is, when it comes to cars, they're art to me. So I guess I don't feel as have-naughty mm-hmm. when I look at a beautiful car and think, oh, it's just such a gorgeous piece of machinery. And
yeah,
and it's like looking at art. So.
Yeah, there is that, just for the arts appreciation. But gosh, and maybe that's my own personal frustration, is just sitting here thinking, gosh, would it be nice to make at least one dream come true? And right. I get kind of bogged down on that from time to time.
Now, in my life, what we do is, like I said, we redirect something. So we have cats, and our cats are named, the current three that we have, Bentley, Ferrari, and Lamborghini. And so I do, when people say, hey, what's that? I'm like, oh, that's Bentley, and that's Lamborghini. And we used to have a Porsche and a Mercedes. And then I fostered some kittens and their mama, and we called her Phantom, as in Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And the babies were Aston Martin, Jaguar, and Maserati.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, finding ways to like appreciate things and say, oh yeah, I have a Bentley.
Right. That's too funny.
Although, be careful with the names. When I was very young, one of my best friends, her name was Mercedes, or is Mercedes. Anyways, eventually she's okay. Really, she did get hit by a car, and I don't know if she was kidding or not when she told me it was a Mercedes that hit her.
Oh boy.
I know the family came into quite a bit of money, and that's why they disappeared and all that from the accident. But yeah, be careful naming them by anything that can hit them.
Well, luckily they are only indoor, and they are very much pampered and have their designated garages. So we're all good.
Well, good, good.
I hear you, Mickey. I think it's in the world also around us, everything is advertisable and easily found out.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at these incredible things anywhere, on the phone, on your your devices. It's we're constantly confronted by it.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sick of the notion that the dream is not achievable, and maybe that's not fair. I mean, maybe that's an idealistic point of view that I've got, that may be sort of naive in some ways, but I don't know. Maybe I've just had enough of trying to live vicariously through other people's success as well. So,
No, I can understand it, because yeah. I mean, you end up in, I guess I'll call it a rut, you know, a financial area that you really can't break out of.
Yeah. Yeah. And you end up with the sentiment that goes along the lines of, okay, what is the point anymore? Right. Turn the page. Right. I don't need to look at the Airstream anymore. What comes next?
Right.
You know, in the meantime, I have a friend over there with a $30,000 cancer bill. And anyway, now we are going to get into politics, but, in any case, all right. Sorry. I didn't mean to steer us down a totally serious path like that, but it has been on my mind. And, you know, if any listener has any comments on this phenomenon that I'm describing, I would love to hear from you and see if who else might share the sentiment and how you know your thoughts on the whole matter. We'd love to hear from you.
I think it's more common than you know. I just think some people are better at either hiding it or coping with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Ben, you had put something up on the board. Renault, Mitsubishi is in trouble.
Yeah, Renault, Mitsubishi, and Nissan are all a corporate group these days. And people may remember a news story from a couple months back about an executive who was smuggled out of Japan in an audio case to avoid going to trial.
Yep.
This was Carlos Ghosn, who is the CEO of this group. Mm-hmm. You know, he did a lot of financial mismanagement and other things like that that they want to, you know, take him to court for and possibly send him to prison. But the upshot of all this mismanagement is the group is in such trouble. And, you know, some of those brands we know are in trouble too, like Mitsubishi hasn't made anything anybody wants to buy in ages. Possible exception of those little Evo sedans that give a Subaru WRX a run for the money. Nissan isn't doing well, at least in the U.S. market. They're just not making much appealing.
I thought I had seen something new from Nissan.
I didn't even know they were still around. Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're still around. But, yeah, I can't even tell you where there's a Mitsubishi dealer, but they're still in our market somewhere, somehow.
Yeah.
Nissan is kind of on the rocks. I've driven a few in my, you know, rental car adventures recently, and, you know, I like the Maxima and the Altima, but the, you know, truck-based products, SUVs, not so much. And having seen how they plumb their cooling systems, I'm not sure I'd want to buy one all that soon. But, yeah, the whole group is in trouble, and so there's thought that they may be killing Renault off altogether, which won't mean anything to us Americans because nothing under that brand has been sold here since the 80s.
Right.
But, you know, Nissan is kind of doing a little soul-searching, too, about building things people want, and I hope Mitsubishi's doing the same, and that their total overall corporate, you know, group ownership is really doing the soul searching.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this briefly on a past episode when Ray Shefska was with us, but we mentioned that a bunch of American Nissan car dealer execs went to Japan to confront Nissan.
Right. Yes.
And Ray said, this is not the first time that sort of thing has happened, but it sounds a lot more serious now than it ever has before for Nissan in particular. It's like, you know, they're not innovating. They're not being responsive to, who knows even if they're doing any market research at this point, but then it doesn't sound like they're showing up in ways that their audience wants them to show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
We just got to.
It would be a loss for France for Renault, though.
Oh, yeah.
A huge loss for France if Renault went out of business. That would be very bad. But the American car market's been kind of weird, and that's the only thing that I think most of our listeners is kind of aware of, is the American car market, and that does not include Renault, and that does not include a number of different names that are actually huge presences in other parts of the world. You know, there's a lot that's missing from this market that we don't get to see because of the stranglehold that our current car companies have on the market.
Is Peugeot still around?
Yes.
Peugeot's that's a kind of cool looking car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In doing a quick web search here, I just came across, I'm not clicking on it. It's a YouTube video link, but it's from Scotty Kilmer. I'm sure everybody knows who that is on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I know that name.
And the title is Why New Nissan Cars Are So Bad, What Went Wrong? So I might have to watch that after we're done and see what Scotty has to say about Nissan cars.
Right. Well, we've got our 10-minute warning, now an 8-minute warning. Shall we do the trivia thing?
Why not?
Let's do it.
Are
there any other quick things we wanted to touch on? Or?
I don't know. There's a couple other things on the thing, but they may take more than 8 minutes to get into. I don't know, Ben, can we talk about Hertz filing for bankruptcy in 5 minutes or less?
Probably, yeah, because there's not a whole lot more to this story, but they are filing for bankruptcy. And, you know, this is just like with the Nissan story, many years of mismanagement. And, you know, they were even in some sort of partnership with Ford for some of those years, but they just did so many things wrong that now they're on the ropes.
Right.
Of course, if they do go under, this could mean a massive flood of cars on the used car market.
Yeah.
You know, that could produce interesting things.
Exactly.
It hurts.
and didn't, I'm trying to think of the Cox Enterprise, like Mannheim. Didn't they lay off like a lot of people?
I don't know.
The auction house. I saw something about 3 weeks ago where they laid off tons and tons of people. So it's interesting that in all of this, I wonder if people just in the, not just the mismanagement, but not needing rentals, not needing, you know, their cars are going to last maybe a little longer because we're not using them as much.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, all the rental traffic has completely dropped out of, you know, existence. People aren't traveling for work these days, and so that cash
except
flow
for me.
Right, except for Ben.
Yeah. but Hertz had, I mean, it's interesting that I'm now putting my head around this, because as a Hertz, like, you know, when you're a member of the hire and you go in there and everything is ready for you. You order everything online, you walk in, there's your car, you know where your car's at. It's so easy. And I'm thinking now, what did they do wrong?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a lot of just decision-making, you know, fiscal management, and, you know, some of their ad campaigns came back to haunt them. You know, the OJ thing, for instance. I mean, even though they were, I don't think he was doing their ads at the time he got in trouble, but I think the guilt by association probably turned a few people away.
Well, yeah. Then we would need to ask Corona how beer sales are going right now.
Through the roof, because my husband is a Corona beer rep.
Really?
Actually, yes. Chris works for a distributor I will not name, and he sells Corona, Modelo, Especial, and all of those. And he, let me tell you, for the state of Georgia, alcohol sales are up 12% in tax-wise. They were up 25% last month, and Corona's doing big guns. Matter of fact, they're in short supply.
I'm in the wrong business.
So people like my friend went out and bought a 6-pack of Corona, took a picture, posted it on Facebook, and said, "Hey, everybody, I've got Corona."
Right, of course.
Yeah. So that could be. All right, how much time do we have now?
We're at 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right, so the question, the grand trivia auto question was, what city was the first to use parking meters? Was it New York, New York, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, or Chicago, Illinois? Becca, what do you think?
My knee jerk is to say New York, but I'm kind of leaning towards Chicago.
Okay, why?
I don't know.
Don, what do you think, Don?
You know, and I'm thinking of these cities as walking cities, New York, Philly, Chicago, and Oklahoma City is more of a driving area. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma City.
Okay. Ben?
Oh, goodness. I haven't a clue, because both of those guesses make some sort of sense. I mean, my gut kind of wants to just say something, but I really don't know.
but see, Don, on your point, though, I understand that, but a lot of people would live further out way back when and drive into the city and have to park and walk around. I don't know.
So the question comes down to which one of these metropolitan areas wanted to make money off of cars parking.
I think that's right. I think it's solid logic in both cases. But having said that, the answer is...
Wait, what was Ben's guess?
Ben had not entered a guess. He's sort of undecided on the whole thing.
Okay.
Unless you want to enter a guess just for the heck of it, Ben?
Nah.
Okay. So the answer is Oklahoma City.
Ding, 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 Don. Wow. Yay.
The history I've got here, it says Oklahoma City on July 16, 1935, Holger George Thewson, I guess is his name, and Gerald Hale designed the first working parking meter called the Black Maria in 1935. Hale and his partner Thewson were engineers at engineering professors at Oklahoma State University. They began working on the concept of a parking meter in 1933 at the request of a specific lawyer in Oklahoma. It says here, lawyer and newspaper publisher Carl McGee. The world's first installed parking meter was in Oklahoma City on July 16, 1935, and McGee received a patent for the apparatus on the 24th of May in 1938. So... But what we don't have is the economic background for this. It's like, was it a privately owned thing? Was it a city owned thing? We don't know. And so that may be an area for more research just for the heck of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And Route 66 went through Oklahoma City too. So there may have been a lot of people stopping in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that was what I was thinking. It's just, it made sense from, I look at things through the lens of public policy. And I think from a revenue standpoint, it makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Oklahoma's always been a poor state, so anything to raise a buck.
Well, I just think it's funny that they actually named it the Black Maria the name of an actual parking meter. So that's very funny to me. So, All right. I guess that wraps it up for another episode of The Thing About Cars. Thanks to our listener, as always, for joining us. Your 5-star ratings of our show go a long way towards making The Thing About Cars appear more in other searches and helping us to reach more and wider audiences. So thanks for leaving your feedback on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever else you listen to the show. It means a great deal to us. And if you like what we do, please support us via Patreon. It's patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. Your small contributions there will ensure that we can actually do this bigger, better, stronger than before. So thank you for your support, and thanks for subscribing to The Thing About Cars. We'll see you again with another episode in about a week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Have a great one on the road.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.